Well, hi. It's time for another edition of Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air radio network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm your host, Bonner Spring, and my guest today is a real Renaissance man by the name of Arthur Coburn. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Arthur grew up in New Jersey, went to Dartmouth and Harvard Law. He passed the Washington bar exam and spent 2 years in the U.S. infantry and survived a 3-year law career before bailing out and landing a job writing educational film scripts for King Screen Productions in Seattle, where he won a local Emmy. I want that to sink in to all you listeners. Think about that career move right there. Then Arthur moved to the big time. He moved to Hollywood, where he edited more than 24 feature films, including something you maybe heard of, Spider-Man, A Simple Plan, and The Cooler. His short fiction has appeared in several anthologies, and his debut novel, Murder in Concrete, has just been released. We're going to be talking about that today. Arthur has traveled and worked all over the world, speaks serviceable French and Italian. He learned enough Polish to order tomato soup without rice, which I need to ask about, and enough Swahili to order hot water when he was on a shoot in a desert encampment in Kenya. He skis, road bikes, and has a pilot's license, plays classical guitar, and can improvise on the piano and Hammond organ. I'm done now. Welcome to Crime Wave, Arthur.
Nice to be here. Nice to see you.
Great. Well, congratulations on your debut novel. I know you publish short fiction, but a novel release gets a heck of a lot more attention. How does it feel? You know, what have you been doing about it?
It feels great, but I discovered that publicizing a novel is almost as much, if not more, work and more stress than writing one. There are so many things to take track of. There are interviews to get. There are reviews to solicit. There are people decisions about whether to spend money on this place or that place and whether that makes any difference. So I've spent a lot of time on publicity the last month and a half or so.
I bet you have. It really is. It makes such an amazing difference. You get your book baby out in the world. You thought it was trouble to write it, edit it, do all the line edits and stuff. And now all of a sudden it's a whole new job, isn't it? You're still at the point where you're doing interviews and are doing any live events?
I'm going to be moderating a panel at the Left Coast Crime Conference coming up. And I have an interview scheduled with someone from the Skagit Valley radio stations, which should be interesting. Although I haven't heard from that person in the last couple of days, but I hope that'll happen. Yeah, of course, I know if I do anything about out the Skagit Valley or around concrete, someone will say, "You put the street in the wrong place. No, that store has never been there," etc.
That's true. It's so funny. Well, concrete is an absolutely amazing place. But let's say with a background as varied as yours, I think an obvious place to begin our conversation today is the story behind your story, your transition to writing fiction from a very successful career in film editing. Can you talk a little bit about yourself and your path leading up to Concrete and the murder in Concrete?
Well, I've been writing ever since I was like 7 years old. When I was a kid, I used to turn the card table on its side, paint backdrops, hang my teddy bears and my beloved Belindy doll from strings, and speak the voices and charge 2 cents to the neighborhood kids to come in and watch. And then in high school, I was a head of the student council, and I was a moderator at the assembly, so I would do skits there. And then later, I started writing things. So I've been writing for years and years and years. And as you know, as you said, published a couple of short stories in anthologies from Sisters in Crime.
Right.
Then at a certain point, I loved editing. Editing is wonderful, but it was never my story. I was always manipulating and polishing someone else's story, which is satisfying. But I wanted to get my own words and thoughts out onto the page and out for people to react to.
That's good. You know, when you were talking before, I was thinking it sounded like you were very much the actor as well as the writer, and hence Hollywood, I guess, maybe the acting thing might have been of some interest.
I had one part. I played in a thing called Triumph of the Spirit. I played a rabbi, and I'm not Jewish, but I had to learn the part in Hebrew with the help from the Hebrew crew. And my performance was not one that's going to get any Academy Awards, but I did go through with it. And they added a beard and various things. So that was my one. High school, I did actually act, but since then, no. But you have to act when you read novels for any kind of a book fair or a book club or a book store. You have to be able to Although I know a friend who would hire an actor to do his reading when he did a presentation at a bookstore, which was a very good idea.
Yeah, I think that's cheating. I think you need to do your own book, Arthur. Okay, well, actually, you'd have no trouble doing it, much less trouble than I probably would have doing it. So let's get to Murder in Concrete, okay? Your debut novel merges your deep Hollywood experience with a really gripping narrative. So could you set the stage for us? How does Murder in Concrete begin?
Well, it begins with a murder. And I'll go back to one more step to say the reason I wrote it was I used to have a childhood nightmare. I was walking with my mother and I'd be holding her hand and I would look up and she'd be gone and I couldn't find her. And that gave me the idea for a young person whose mother or father disappears. In this case, it was a young woman whose mother, she comes home and finds her. Well, should I be giving away the plot here as we talk about this? I don't know.
Well, let's not give too many spoilers, but I think what we want to do is let everyone listening sort of know a little bit about your main character, who is a fascinating woman I'm going to talk to you about a little bit more. And actually, I shouldn't have said woman. I should have said girl, shouldn't I, Arthur? So give us a sense of what happens when she comes home and stop there.
She finds devastation at home, enough that scares her, and it sends her into PTSD, which she doesn't realize until later she gets this into therapy. And she has nowhere to turn because her father has disappeared. And she turns to her grandmother. Whose name is Grandma Lottie in the story, who was modeled on my Aunt Muriel, who was a person out of the old century and lived in old-fashioned ways. And she fell right into Grandma Lottie's point of view.
That's great. I really appreciate the fact that you started with the childhood dream of doing something. I've often said to audiences when I've been talking about myself that, you know, we all have what ifs, you know, like 100 times every day. But it's the what if that comes with that deep emotional resonance that sticks with us, right, for a really long time. And we need to write those stories. I think both of my novels that are out and the ones that are not out all have that in common. So your main character, this girl who comes home to find her mother murdered, her name is Charlie Perdue. So when I wrote my notes for talking to you today, I wrote in all caps on this piece of paper, voice, V-O-I-C-E, in Charlie Perdue, which is the young girl. You created an interesting and very authentic sounding and acting teenage girl, which you are not.
No way. The interesting thing is I'm moderating a panel for it was originally called Geezer Writer. It's actually older protagonists, and my protagonist is 19, and I'm much older than that, and I'm not female. So it was but I realize you have to do that. I mean, Jane Austen, Shakespeare, everyone writes people who they are not, and so I don't. So it was a little bold, but I decided to do it, and I felt good about it.
Yeah. So Charlie, you know, how did you get the voice of a teenage girl so right? It was a spot on dialogue, you know, her very teenage inconsistencies. I've had this conversation with other people, and anyone who's listening who's had teenagers will understand that they can be so astute one second and absolutely fall apart and say something weird, you know, 30 seconds later. So did you do anything special to get Charlie's voice?
I just sort of osmosed it as I do most of the things. When I study a language, I just sort of fake it and try it, and stuff comes out wrong and then stuff comes out right. When I play the piano, I just wing it and find out whatever notes seem to come up. And I just winged it with Charlie. I must say, I've revised it several times. And I did have a couple of women read it. I have one woman who reads my stuff regularly. She's a very good friend and a fabulous writer herself. Her name is Lisa Fugard. Fabulous writer of a book called Skinner's Drift. And she wouldn't, no one ever said, Arthur, you've got this wrong. They would say, why don't you have a little more emotional moment here? because she just found out this, she would do something more. And I added, I mean, if you remember that scene where she makes the little doll and she gives it to her mother for Christmas, that just came out of that inspiration. Someone said, you need an emotional moment here. And that's what came to my mind. And it worked for me and it seemed to work.
That's wonderful. I'm going to circle back to that in a minute, but on my notes right here, I have, she also, as you mentioned just a minute ago, seeing her mother murdered the way she was, and that's where we're going to stop with that particular thing. She ends up with PTSD, which introduces that element of, let's call it unreliability, you know, in her narrative, how she's experiencing the world. Was that something you had to research, or is that also seat of your pants?
Well, I originally had her not being having PTSD. I read her how to have her being an extraordinary person with an incredible memory, and it just didn't work. I put it out there and it just didn't fly. And I came on the notion of PTSD, and I read a book about this, a wonderful book with the title, which I can't remember now, about PTSD and how it affects not only people who've had trauma, rape victims, earthquake victims, all kinds of people who've gone through difficult moments. And it gave me all I needed. It gave me someone who had sort of unreliable memory, who went off in strange directions, who did strange, unusual things. And that seemed to work for me.
Yeah, it does. It works. It works really well. And so it sounds like you're saying that you're not, that your process is more as someone who writes by the seat of your pants and revises.
I'm a born and bred pantser. I outline a little bit, as I said, and I'll see events that I want to have in there. But when I've tried to write an outline, it becomes too mechanical. I'm trying to fit things into my outline and it doesn't have an organic feel to it. So I've gone back to being a pantser at heart.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. It given your background, I think it shouldn't surprise any of our listeners that Murder in Concrete is also a very highly visual read, a cinematic, one might even say. Do you take anything from your film experience to inform your writing style, or maybe how you visualize scenes or anything like that?
Not formally, but I think that way because, as you know, I did edit movies for 25, 30 years, and you're looking not only at visuals, but at sounds. And I remember hearing early on in my writing tutelage from other people that you had to have smells and sounds and feelings and textures in your writing. You just can't do dialogue, although there are writers who certainly have done that pretty well.
Sure, that's true. Well, because it's an integral part of the story and it doesn't necessarily lead to any plot spoilers, can we talk about movie making and zombies? Okay, the reason I want to ask this for everyone who's listening is that Charlie's search, we're going to leave that a little bit vague, leads her to a low-budget zombie movie production in the desert. And I would say that your filmmaking expertise shines through here, Arthur. You're portraying the movie set, the characters, the behind-the-scenes dynamics, and a diverse cast of characters who all become pieces in the puzzle. Charlie's trying to figure out. So you talk about movie making a little and how that plays into Charlie's, the depiction of Charlie's journey, all the different things that come together. And I want to hear about zombies too.
Well, I've never been much for zombie movies, although I did work for Sam Raimi, who likes to do movies like that. So I osmosed a little from Sam, who was a fabulous director and a wonderful person to work for. But that just sort of came out as an idea. I put her there, and it seems like something to be unusual. And I love to putting zombies in. You don't see many zombies. You see other characters, Russians, etc. Yeah. But I like the idea of something off the cuff. And by the way, I've never been to Barstow. Well, I just sort of invented that, and a friend of mine said, "Oh, I've been to Barstow lots of times. You captured it," so I felt good about that.
That's really great. No, it was interesting. You do go into quite a bit of really interesting detail about the, I guess it would be fair to call it the nuts and bolts of what goes into producing, to being on set and stuff like that. It adds a lot to the story.
I wonder whether I was giving too much detail, by the way, at some point. It doesn't seem so at this point. So go ahead. Excuse me for interrupting.
No, you know, you're. I don't know how many reviews you've got, but when you get your first 2-star review, when someone says, "Oh, I didn't like that," you'll just laugh and you'll think about this interview because I thought the detail was great. Everybody's going to have a different opinion. So the title is Murder in Concrete. Talk about Concrete a little, if you will, please. It's a real place.
Yeah, it is a real place. It was a town. Originally, they were looking for coal, and there were brushes with Indians and brushes with people who were looking for coal and gold and various things. But what I love abandoned things. I used to abandoned machinery, abandoned places. I was in Poland on a movie. One of the women who were there on the set, and I would travel around on weekends to go to abandoned castles, and we'd explore those. And you could explore the abandoned concrete mill or concrete plant in Concrete, Washington. Mm-hmm. Which is fascinating. And it used to be a huge complex with great, and I put some pictures on my website of the smokestacks, and they were hired hundreds of people. And now, of course, it's just a shell of a building. But I love the sort of dark alleyways and tramways and various pieces. And it seemed to me to be an intriguing place to set something. And as you know, I set an early scene there where she meets some young boys who were screeching out some rather originally much more provocative language. And I toned it down because I didn't want to turn off every woman in the reading audience by saying, I don't want to read something that has that in it, so I've made it a more mild version.
Yeah, you're talking a lot about revision, and I know particularly for a first book, there's probably a lot of it that comes in there. So the concrete is a real place. I don't know if there is, I might be asking a question for which there is no answer, but I was wondering as I was reading if you plan sort of a double entendre with the title Murder in Concrete.
Well, like, as you recall, there is a murder that takes place in concrete at the very end.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't plan it that way, but it works out that way.
I see. Okay, thank you. That's nice. Arthur, are you writing anything new right now?
I have another novel that I'm working on now. I've been working on it for several years, just like I did this one. It's about a transgender attorney who finds the woman of his life, who finally accepts him as he is, and bad stuff happens to her. So they think he did the bad stuff, and he has to spend the novel trying to find out who really did it. And there are many suspicious characters.
Oh, that sounds delightful. And you're pantsing this one as well.
Well, it's been, yes, I've been through various versions of it. And originally when I wrote it, the murder didn't take place until page 90, which I realize is not something that most mystery readers like to have happen. So I did various shufflings and restructurings, and then I was bouncing back and forth. So now I've picked out a kind of a structure that goes forward and then comes back, but doesn't do it too many times.
So that's good. So you've got it. Yeah. I think the it's one of those 3 rules of writing that nobody knows what they are. But I think one of them is you have to have a dead body by the 3rd chapter. Pretty much.
Although a great writer can make anything happen. I mean, I remember asking questions to various writing things. Well, can I do this? If you do it right, yes, you can. If you don't do it right, not going to work.
Right, you're going to get one of those 2-star reviews.
By the way, I also have had lots of therapy, and I love writing the therapy scenes with Charlie and her therapist.
That's good. Thank you for bringing that up. That's good. It wasn't something I was planning on asking you about, but yeah, it really goes back to my comments about her dialogue, and in this case, hers and the therapist's dialogue seems so very natural, and I recommend it. I'm going to recommend the book highly when we get to that in just a minute. Before we go off the air, are you active online? Can you tell the listeners where they might see you or find something
website,
about you?
I have a website, arthurcoburn.com, which has my reviews and various pictures of concrete and various other things. I'm active on Instagram and Facebook. I signed up for X, but I don't seem to get there very often. So,
I'm sort of not there much anymore either. So arthurcoburn.com is good. And for all of you listeners who are going to be attending Left Coast Crime in Seattle, Arthur is moderating a panel about old geezers. I mean, no, it's not about old geezers. Well, not dead yet, older sleuths and mysteries. And I don't know how you got that gig.
I don't know either.
Okay. But anyhow, if you're there, please go up to Arthur and say hi and tell him you heard him on Crime Wave. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat today, Arthur. Best wishes for success with your debut novel. Let me just close by saying Murder in Concrete is more than just a mystery. It's a reflection on loss and resilience, and the Hollywood backdrop, which we discussed just a little bit, isn't some La La Land, dreamland kind of place, but it's a complex world. The book entertained me, but it's also stayed with me long after I turned.
May I inject that I got that line about everything is always in perfect light? I got that from an actress who does dialogue coaching for a porn studio.
Thank you so much for closing with that. That's great. I do hope you'll come back to visit. Thank you so much, Arthur.
Thank you, Bonar.